SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour three at the races, just off with a really enjoyable, very pleased to have had a chance to get Howard Belvoir back on the show. And I was looking up some of those answers. And one thing I didn't know at the time to bring up with him, I'm sure that I would have surprised Howard by saying that I had passed through his hometown. At one time, he wasn't born, and I don't know how long he lived in Kansas. But his birthplace was Iola, Kansas, which is a tiny town down toward the Flint Hills and in between Kansas City and Wichita. And I used to tromp those areas for Procter & Gamble in my days in Kansas City. And all the way through to, down to Tulsa and Springfield, Missouri, and I Emporia, and I know that area pretty good. And I just saw birthplace Iola, Kansas. I was like, wow, because that's a whistle stop at the best. It can be described as a whistle stop. Let me get John White in here. And I know that John was listening because John sent me a text. He said, ask about Red Eye Express. And as Howard said, his first good horse. John White, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I certainly thoroughly enjoyed that. That was wonderful. And Howard Belvoir is a class act. Again, a wonderful father and but a very good trainer, and now a three-time Long Acres Mile winning trainer. In fact, Barkley joins Noosa Beach as the only two horses to be stakes winners at Emerald Downs at the ages of 2, 3, 4, and 5 with this victory in the Long Acres Mile. So that's kind of a feather in the cap for Barkley as well. You know, one of the interesting aspects of this year's Long Acres Mile, it had a small field of six, and one of the runners in the race, my pick in the race, who did not break well, and I thought would get a good stalking trip, and instead he trailed basically the whole race, Conquest Windy City from the Mike Maker barn, flew from Kentucky to Seattle-Tacoma International Airport on Friday and landed not long before that guy stole the plane, and has been so prominent in the national news by that 75-minute joyride where he was doing stunts in the air and talking to air traffic controllers and then crashed the plane into an island in Puget Sound. So if Conquest Windy City had come along a little later on Friday, he could have been in a pickle in terms of they closed Seattle-Tacoma Airport, SeaTac, as they call it, and in fact, that's the airport that I first landed at. When I was a senior in high school, I didn't tell my parents, but the first Sunday of the Long Acres meet that year, I felt compelled to, I just couldn't stand it to not be there opening week, so I was working at a golf course in high school at the time, and working on a golf course in the mornings on the weekends as well as during the week, and I had Mondays off. But so Sunday morning, I had a friend of mine drive me to the airport, and that was my first flight, was from Spokane to Seattle, and I flew into SeaTac and walked to Long Acres from the track, actually, and spent the day, and Russell Bays' father won the feature that day, Joe Bays, on Coco's Pal. One of the top Washington breeds of all time. That was the Boeing Stakes, as we keep the airplane theme going. And then I took a shuttle into downtown Seattle and caught a Greyhound bus back to Spokane that night. And my parents were kind of upset, and kind of chewing me out when I got home. I'd left a detailed note of what I was doing, but they were worried, and you know, that's not great for me that I had parents very concerned. But the funniest part about that was my dad was scolding me for this and so forth, and then after about 5 minutes he goes, you know, this could actually work out great. Why not next week you fly over on Sunday, I'll drive over on Saturday, I'll pick you up at the airport on Sunday, and we'll drive back Sunday night. And my mom threw her hands up in the air, and she says, okay, I give up. My wife gets the biggest kick out of that because she says, I can certainly understand why your mom was so frustrated. Here you're supposed to be, you know, being the parents to your child. And then within 5 minutes, my dad's conjuring up this plan for us to go to Longacres next week. And I really enjoyed how Howard Belvoir was extolling the charm of Longacres. That was my favorite place on earth growing up. You had Mount Rainier off onto the south on a clear day, and it was so majestic. And as Howard said, that track was just a thing of beauty. It was immaculately kept, had the cleanest restrooms I still have ever seen to this day anywhere. Flowers all over the place, and those were poplar trees on each turn that really kind of added to the coziness of the track. They had behind the tote board, there was a cottage that Joe Gottstein, who built that track, that's where he lived during the Longacres meet with his wife, Luella. And in fact, I interviewed her. I never got to meet Joe Gottstein, but when I went to work for the racing form in 1974, I got to interview Luella Gottstein in that cottage. And my dad had said he thought that was the greatest place on earth that he would like to live, is behind the tote board at Longacres. And that place was just so special to me. And then once I first went to Santa Anita, that place became my favorite, but I'll always have fond memories of Longacres. And like I say, that was just a wonderful interview with Howard Belvoir, and really a nice win for Barkley. And now Belvoir's got 3 Longacres mile victories to his credit. The all-time leader is Jim Penny with 5.
Oh, okay. And Jim Penny, how about that? And we talked to Jim, I can't recall talking a Longacres win with him, but we did talk about the good mare that he had recently.
Well, and he was just one of the top Washington horsemen of all time. That was a big family, that whole family. And in fact, the sire of my all-time favorite horse, Turbulator, stood at their farm in Natchez. That was Cole Command, and Cole Command ran in the Kentucky Derby and was very well bred and was a very successful sire. But that Penny family, very, very instrumental in Washington racing and breeding. And in fact, I was right there next to the winner's circle in the crowd as a fan in 1973 when Jim Penny won his first Longacres mile with a horse by the name of Silver Mallet, who had run against Riva Ridge at Aqueduct. They'd bought him in New York to bring him out to try to win the Longacres mile. But that was probably Jim Penny's all-time favorite win. If it wasn't the all-time, it was certainly one of them, because the irony was that Bobby Frankel sent up a horse from Delmar by the name of Pataha Prince, a Washington bred, that Frankel had claimed off Penny. And Frankel immediately had success with Pataha Prince, who was the top two-year-old in Washington when he was 2, winning the Washington Futurity, which is now the Gottstein, which became the Gottstein Futurity. But Pataha Prince was 8 in 1973, and that's when Frankel claimed him that year at Hollywood Park. And Pataha Prince won the Bing Crosby Handicap at Del Mar in 108 and change as an 8-year-old, and they sent him up to run in the Longacres Mile, and he had Alvaro Pineda aboard him. And he had the lead for most of the stretch run, and Silver Mallet was trying to catch him with Larry Pierce aboard, and Pierce just got up to win by a neck and tied the track record that day. And that was Jim, the first of the 5 Longacres Mile wins for Jim Penny. But the fact that he beat Frankel and beat the horse that was claimed off of him in a photo finish for his first Longacres Mile, again, that's the kind of stuff in racing that you just you almost can't make this stuff up. I mean, it's like, you know, if you submitted that as a script, they'd say, no, that wouldn't happen. They'd reject the script. So, but that was a very proud moment in Penny's life and Penny was also proud that the horse that he had raced for practically his whole career was still running big at the age of 8, and after being a successful 2-year-old, darn near won the mile. So, you know, Penny was proud of that as well.
Frankel won 3 miles. His first came in 76 with you, Whippy, Sandy Hawley aboard, and then he came back. He won one in the 70s, one in the 80s, and one in the 90s. In the 80s, Simply Majestic for Ted Sabarese. And then Paracella was training Simply Majestic in 89, and he won. Russell Bays won it in 88. Ron Hansen was aboard in 89. And then Bobby came back and won with Stevens for Ed Gann with Louis Cypher.
Yeah, and Louis Cypher beat one of the all-time popular horses in the Northwest, perhaps the second most popular horse to Turbulator, and that was Captain Kondo. I used to feed his mother, Kondo Mia, carrots at Playfair. He was trained by Aiden Ashby, and Captain Kondo was this gray horse, and he was like a 9-year-old or something of that. He was way up there in age when he ran in that Long Acres Mile, but he was a real huge fan favorite. And I was at Del Mar working for the Racing Form in 1991, and I saw Frankel in the stable area the morning after he won with Louis Cypher. And that was a big win because Gary Stevens, of course, had broken the record, shattered it to be the in terms of wins for a meeting before he shifted down and became a successful jockey on the Southern California circuit and in 1984. And Stevens, you know, that's one of the things he had not accomplished until right then. And as someone who had ridden so much in the Northwest, beginning at LaBois Park in Idaho and then going to Portland Meadows and then dominating at Long Acres, that was a race that, of course, he really wanted to win. That was a very special win for Gary Stevens, for Frankel. But I saw Frankel in the barn area the next morning, and I congratulated him. I said, hey, Bobby, congratulations for winning another Long Acres Mile. And as I say, the horse that ran second was Captain Kondo. And Frankel looked at me and he goes, oh, all I had to do was beat that Captain Kangaroo. I mean, that was so typical of Frankel. Oh, I had to beat Captain Kangaroo. And but, you know, you mentioned you Whippy, and that's kind of a big race in terms of Long Acres Mile lore. Because I was working for the form that in those days. I had worked at Long Acres early in the season, but when Playfair would open on the other side of the state, usually in like July, I would go over there. So I was missing seeing those Long Acres miles. But the people in the media told me what happened, and Bobby Frankel was there in a T-shirt and jeans. And in the winner's circle after Whippy won the race, the media, they were asking people in the winner's circle, are you the trainer? And they'd, no. Are you the trainer? No. And are you the trainer? Finally, a guy said, well, if you're looking for the trainer of this horse, he's over there at the concession stand. So like 10 members of the Seattle and Tacoma media traipse over to this concession stand with their notebooks and recorders and so forth, and they're standing there interviewing Bobby Frankel after winning the biggest race in the Pacific Northwest.
I love it. You know, I speculated that maybe Johnny Longden had won it as a rider and a trainer. I see that he won twice, but he never won it as a trainer, which is a little surprising that he won.
Well, he ran some big horses in it, including Baffle, who held the record down the hill at Santa Anita for eons. And, Longden loved Long Acres. He loved spending the summer at Long Acres. That's where I first met John Longden, again, when I was with the Racing Form in the 1970s. And, in fact, he kind of got a little perturbed at me because I was interviewing him about this and that, and then the citation and Noor came up, and I said, you know, one thing about it, when Noor kept beating Citation in 1950, I said, you know, Citation was kind of over the hill. He didn't run in 1949, and he really wasn't quite the same. And he says, and I'll say it politely, he says, baloney. And he says, how come I had to break a track or a record practically every time I ran against Citation if he was so over the hill? And I said, well, that's a good point, sir. And then I went to look that up afterwards, because sometimes a trainer or a jockey will say something and, well, it doesn't really pan out. He was right. Noor practically had to set a tracker world record every time he beat Citation that year. That's something I've always kept in mind, that while Citation won those 19 races as a three-year-old and swept the Triple Crown, was, you know, one of the greatest horses of all time. And I always thought, you know what, he was kind of a shell of himself as a five-year-old. That point that Longdon made was right on target. I mean, you know, Citation just had trouble beating Noor because Noor was an outstanding horse in his own right. So, but Longdon was really a favorite of Joe Godstein, who, again, like I say, built that track. And Godstein, that he would have just been so sad that track got sold to Boeing, you know, considering all he did to get that track built and keep it going through Depression years and so forth. And Godstein loved to race horses. In fact, when I interviewed his widow in that cottage, there were all kinds of winner's circle pictures all over the place. And Godstein liked to race. He raced under the name Altea's Stable, which was Seattle spelled backwards. And whenever he would win a race, generally the people kind of booed when the horse got into the winner's circle, because, you know, the guy owned the track. So I asked Mrs. Godstein, I said, Mrs. Godstein, how did Joe feel whenever he was getting booed with a winner in the winner's circle? And she said, he loved it because that meant he won the race.
Well, it's unusual for a race, especially one that lives on in another venue, to have the kind of aura that this race has. And, you know, the history obviously, you know, it goes the longest way to create that. But you can tell that, you know, even in the transplanted version of the mile at Emerald, it, you know, it has the same cachet. And I suppose the Cornhusker is maybe the closest parallel that, you know, moved on to Prairie Meadows from, you know, its run at Exarban. Maybe that's the, you know, the most the one that comes to mind anyway. But,
well, when the mile was run for the first time in 1935, it had a $10,000 purse, and it was the richest mile race in the United States. And they had said that for a long time. So again, one day I checked that out at the CTBA library just to make sure, because again, sometimes you hear these things or the track says these things and then it doesn't check out. Well, it checked out. It was, because I thought, well, gee, maybe the Met Mile or something had to be bigger, but no. In 1935, it was the richest 1 mile race in the United States, and so that kind of put it on the map right there. And, you know, I really give tremendous credit to Ron Crockett, the guy that is the main man responsible for the building of Emerald Downs and to keep racing going in the Seattle area. They had the transition from the closure of Long Acres, and then a few years at Yakima Meadows, they conducted a Long Acres meet at Yakima Meadows in the center of the state before Emerald Downs got built. And but Ron, you know, was a real kind of sticking point with him was he took pride in Emerald Downs, and so many people have such fond memories of Long Acres that they even still to this day sometimes call Emerald, like John Sadler did it on your show, and he called it Long Acres. And, you know, that kind of rubbed Ron the wrong way, considering all the sacrifice he went through to build Emerald Downs. But considering that, I give Crockett great credit to keep that race and keep that name, because that's part of how that tradition is continued. They didn't monkey with it. They kept the name, and Baffert won the very first one, and Pegram with Is It In Good at Emerald Downs, and that kind of got it off on a good start at Emerald Downs. And so it has continued, and I congratulate now that Ron Crockett is out of being the president of Emerald. The Muckleshoot tribe is now, they own the land and they now own the track, and I give them credit that they've kept it going too. And they've changed a number of the names of the races up there, including the Derby this year to the Muckleshoot Derby. That was the Long Acres Derby, then it was the Emerald Downs Derby. Now it's the Muckleshoot Derby, and I do hope that they resist ever changing this to like the Muckleshoot Mile or something, because that Long Acres Mile, it's just so traditional with that name that goes clear back to 1935.
No doubt, and anybody that is paying attention would know that that would be a sacrilege, actually. I appreciate, John, the added layer, but I had to get Howard on, knowing number one that he had been sick last week and had a bit of a health scare, and knowing Heath, who does a tremendous job calling charts, and of course Van's been on with us too, doing very well down in Southern California. So Howard Belvoir, a real treat.
Heath's in my fantasy league and has been for many years. In fact, one of his runners in his stable is Unique Bella. And he's been a winner of my fantasy league a number of times. So he's one of the better players. Well, actually, in my league, everybody's a good player. We've got Jay Pridman and Brad Free and Michael Hammersley. It's a tough league, let me tell you. So, and Byron King. Byron King's trying this year to become only the second person to be a three-peat winner in my league. Brad Free was the first to do it, and King's out there with a huge lead, so it looks like King's got a very good chance to accomplish the fantasy league three-peat. But Heath, like I say, he's in my fantasy league, and it's a wonderful family. Like, you know, Van himself, a successful jockey and a successful trainer, and that meant a lot to Van last year to win that race, and he was the first person to win the Long Acres Mile as a jockey and a trainer, because he had won it back in the early 1990s during that transition period at Yakima Meadows when he was on Want a Winner. So Van was the first one to pull off that double as a jockey and trainer in the Long Acres Mile.
Well, we look from the northwest down to the furthest point down the coast in California, down to Del Mar, John. Let's get in some thoughts about what went on this weekend. I've touched on the results, but Mark Glatt with a win, speaking of Northwest, winning with Cordiality in the Solana Beach. Had Jerry Hollendorfer yesterday. Instagram looks like, right now, I mean, the man versus boys when it comes to the two-year-old scene. And Uvetsi, the summer of Sadler and Aronis continues at Del Mar. Rancho Bernardo goes her way. And another big weekend in Pacific Classic Field will come together later today. Some thoughts about Del Mar last week.
Well, I'm with everybody that... Instagram, I mean, how can you not be just overwhelmed by what it looks like we're dealing with here? I mean, it appears the sky is the limit. This is one of those expensive auction purchases that looks like he's certainly going to pan out. That was a huge win at Los Alamitos in his debut by 10. And the 88 buyer he got there, that's a strong buyer at that time of the year for a two-year-old for sure. And then he came up with the 92 and the Best Pal, winning by a little more than 10 as a 1-10 favorite. And, you know, there were some real encouraging things about Instagram. He didn't break all that sharply in his debut. It wasn't horrible, but it wasn't all that sharply. And he was having to stand in that inside post position in the Best Pal, and a couple of horses didn't want to go into the gate, and so Instagram had to stand there for quite a while, and I was wondering if he might not come out of that inside post too alertly, but he did. He broke very sharply and vied for the early lead, and again, we've been really extolling the talent of Drayden Van Dyke and how he's being entrusted with these young, very talented youngsters. And Van Dyke just sat chilly while vying for that early lead and then drew off and won that race, got a 92 buyer, and that's the highest buyer so far this year by a two-year-old colt. The highest buyer so far this year by a two-year-old filly is by the winner of the Sorrento, Bellafina, who got a 94. But, boy, this Instagram, I mean, it just, you know, and Jerry Hollendorfer is one of those guys that you just, to me, I can't help but root for to win a Kentucky Derby. I mean, the guy's done practically everything you can do in this game except win the Kentucky Derby. And he, you know, he had the event of the year who got hurt and Shared Belief who got hurt. And the last couple of years, you know, he's had big long shots run actually pretty well in the Kentucky Derby. You were talking about Battle of Midway.
Mm-hmm.
And he finished third at 40-1. And then this year, Instilled Regard at like 85-1, something like that, finished fourth. So, I, you know, if Instagram does make it to the Kentucky Derby, he won't be 40-1 or higher. That is for sure.
No, this is a an exciting horse, and the way he finished, and the way he's in just two starts, just looking really tractable. Is not a runoff. It just feels like he's a horse that will respond to request and doesn't have to have the lead. Looks like he's got finish and the really efficient. Who was I talking to off the air yesterday? I forget. Jay. I think Jay Pribman. And about, you know, how efficient this horse looks. These are the kind that, you know, that are not tough on themselves physically, that, you know, just cover ground without, you know, without having to do all that much. I mean, they're just making, you know, we hear Baffert talk about this, particularly, you know, that this is a horse that really looks like there's no limit to the potential. There's more,
well, that
though.
Smooth way of going, I mean, does remind us of American Pharoah and Justify. I mean, they both had that kind of same smooth as silk and just covered that ground, just kind of floated over it. And this colt certainly has that same kind of look to him. And speaking of Baffert, I mean, what's really mouthwatering about the Del Mar Futurity is the prospect of Instagram facing Roadster, because Baffert's extremely high on Roadster, and he lived up to his being touted before his first race with a very convincing win, only an 81 buyer. But I mean, the way he did that with Mike Smith aboard, I mean, it looks like, you know, he's the real deal too. So that would be a very interesting meeting between Instagram and Roadster at this time. I mean, I would have to think Instagram would be favored. If I was making the morning line for the race, I'd have to make Instagram the favorite, since he's got the much higher buyer so far of the 92 and the big wins by the big margins of 10 and 10 and a quarter. But, boy, you don't want, considering Baffert has won the Del Mar Futurity, you know, a billion times, you don't want to you know, sit here and say that Roadster certainly couldn't win the race. And I mean, that would be quite a closing day thing to look forward to, Instagram and Roadster in the Del Mar Futurity.
Some other results as well, John. Some thoughts about Anonymity. It went in 2-5 versus Yvetzi and Sky Diamonds, and Yvetzi, I thought, was in control right away. And Tyler Bays has had a very good Del Mar.
Oh, he's riding so well. In fact, he was originally scheduled to ride in the Long Acres Mile on Curlin rules, but he had a setback, as I understand it, and that's why he didn't make the trip north to the Long Acres Mile. But, you know, one thing about Yvetzi, this Bodemeister filly, I've always kind of liked her in that she's the type, that she's been always a pretty good check earner, and she's kept very good company her whole career. I mean, even though she hadn't run in a stakes race until this year in May, but I mean, she'd faced some real toughies throughout her life. I mean, last time out, she faced Unique Bella, and I mean, you know, she just was no match for her and finished fourth. But the time before that, she beat Bernina Starr and Vale Dory at Santa Anita and the Santa Lucia. And this is just a filly that, to me, she goes out and she gives you a pretty honest effort every single time she goes out there. And again, you talk about one of my favorite owners. You know, Costa Ronas has just put so much into this game, and he's really having a lot of success. And John Sadler, I mean, and Sadler's going to likely have the big favorite in the Pacific Classic. They'll be drawing that this evening at Del Mar, so we'll find out this evening who all is going in there. It looks like a short field, but Accelerate, who's the second-ranked thoroughbred in the NTRA poll behind Justify, with wins this year in the Santa Anita Handicap and the Gold Cup at Santa Anita, both at a mile and a quarter, no doubt will be the favorite in the race. Sadler told Pribman, as Pribman reported in the Racing Form, that he's not going to enter Catalina Cruiser, and they're looking at like maybe either the Woodward or the Pat O'Brien for Catalina Cruiser. And I can see why they're thinking Pat O'Brien, because it's a win and you're in for the Dirt Mile, and that's the race that they're kind of have in mind for Catalina Cruiser, since they have the Breeders' Cup Classic in mind for Accelerate. And then Pavel, I was very impressed. I mean, I was high on him last year. He ran such a good race in that Jim Dandy off only a maiden sprint victory at Santa Anita, and he finished right there with Always Dreaming and Cloud Computing, winners of two-thirds of the Triple Crown, and that race won by Good Samaritan, and then was so impressive in winning the Smarty Jones at Parks, and actually ran an extremely creditable third as a three-year-old behind Diversify and Keen Ice. I mean, he only got beat a length and three-quarters by Diversify as a three-year-old, as a three-year-old with only three races under his belt. But he was a no-show in the Breeders' Cup Classic, and then he had some tough trips and went to Dubai. But he really put it together in that Stephen Foster. Doug O'Neill has said it on your show, how much they've just always thought of Pavel. They've thought he's in the same league as I'll Have Another. So I'm really eager to see how Pavel, if could maybe this time give Accelerate a run for his money. That certainly was not in the case in the San Pascual Stakes earlier this year, when both Accelerate and Pavel had troubled trips. They both had trouble that day, but the difference was Accelerate overcame his trouble and won. And then they met again in the Gold Cup, and Accelerate dominated that day, and Pavel just never really was a threat. But now coming off that Stephen Foster, I mean, this is the time for Pavel to show maybe he is one of the major players for this year's Breeders' Cup Classic if he can put together back-to-back wins in the Foster and the Pacific Classic. So this is a very important race for Pavel. And then, as I say, it looks like a short field this year. Beach View, who ran that big race in the Cougar the Second for Leonard Powell, he's one of the other ones, and also the lieutenant for Michael McCarthy, the half-brother to Justify, coming off a second in the Suburban to Diversify, as expected to be in the Pacific Classic. But it, to me, it kind of boils down to Accelerate or Pavel, and like I say, I'm very eager to see if Pavel could maybe turn the tables on Accelerate this time. But boy, Accelerate has certainly had a terrific year this year, and he's certainly proven to be a mile and a quarter horse, which is interesting because going back to when he finished third in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, there was this talk about maybe he was not that much of a horse to go a mile and a quarter. They thought that you know, he finished third in the Pacific Classic last year behind Collected and Arrogate, and was kind of a weak third. Really, he was weakening late. But boy, those two wins this year, going a mile and a quarter in the Big Cap and the Gold Cup, have, I think, dispelled those mile and a quarter worries for Accelerate.
Accelerate, Pavel, you mentioned the lieutenant, who should not be completely dismissed. Prime Attraction, Beachview for Leonard Powell. Baffert's going to run Mubtihij, who disappointed at Lone Star. And then
looks like now he's not going to go,
according
to Privman's report. Yeah,
okay.
He got sick, and Baffert's gotten a little behind in his training, and he's a little light in the work tab department, so it looks like he's not going to go.
Well, he does have Roman Rosso, the Argentinian, that makes a first North American start. This is not necessarily something we see from Baffert too much, getting a horse like this, but why not? Let's see what... Let's see, you know, coming off of three straight Latin American wins that were the group ones, you never really know when it comes to the South American horses. It's a mixed bag.
It really is. I mean, that's the wild card for sure. And I remember, Gentleman and some of these others for Richard Mandela that have come up from South America, so... We'll see how Baffert does with this wild card horse. But as I say, I think going in, I'll be pretty surprised if the winner isn't Accelerator Pavel, with the caveat of we'll say that if there's somebody to maybe upset, it would be the Baffert wild card. I mean, and I respect the lieutenant. I could see him hitting the board, but I think it's kind of a tall order for him to beat both Pavel and Accelerate, but certainly not out of the question. I mean, he's in good enough form. He's come around. And
very much. And as it happens, we've talked enough already with Michael McCarthy as he, was getting him to kind of round in this direction. And I happened to spend a couple of minutes with the Warrens in New York after the Suburban Second. I mean, nobody was getting to Diversify, certainly, in that circumstance. The wild card, mile and a quarter, makes a big difference. And knowing that you've got a horse that doesn't have to necessarily relish a mile and a quarter, but is a authentic horse going 10 furlongs, that's part of the exercise. It's the same rationale that has got Wonder Godot heading toward the Travers. That you've got a horse that will finish and can get a mile and a quarter in a good fashion. So why not? And I like the lieutenant, and I like the direction. I've been kind of waiting, and I told Mr. Warren, this horse, not done yet. He's, once he's broken through now with the Graded Stake win and the placement, he certainly was flattered by Diversify's performance, Saratoga last week. So Pacific Classic, we'll have a field together and have the whole card. The Pacific Classic tonight and the rest of the Pacific Classic fields on Wednesday, so the rest of the draw. John, I appreciate it. I appreciate the Long Acres love and the Belvoir appreciation, and we'll catch up. We'll catch up next week. We'll do some recapping of the Pacific Classic.
Well, actually, I'll have to bow out next week because I'll be on I-5 headed up to Golden Gate for my steward stint. So,
nice.
Yeah. So. All right. I'll take a rain check and then catch up with you the following week.
Very good. Well, safe travels and call him right. John White.
I will try.
There you
but
go.
But it seems like no matter how you call them, if you call it this way, these guys are upset. And if you call it that way, those guys are upset. So that's kind of the
only,
nature of that job.
Yeah, there's only... there's only 50% are gonna approve no matter what direction.
Exactly.
I love it. John White, everybody. Let's take a break. Last of the morning, probably. And going to get a visit in with Graham Motion. Been chasing Graham for 2 or 3 weeks. He had a vacation. He was abroad for a few days. And he's back. And, of course, won on over the weekend. Won the Pucker Up.
But he's got a bunch of things happening. I try to get him as much in as we can with Graham. He's actually home for a little bit, and I want to know. I'll ask him as much. Yeah, we'll get as much as we can from Graham Motion. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio. Join us at Presque Isle Downs for our two biggest days of racing. Sunday, September 16th, the $200,000 Presque Isle Mile. Monday, September 17th, the Grade II $400,000 Presque Isle Masters. North America's top filly and mare sprinters compete in the Premier Breeders' Cup Prep Race. Free Presque Isle Masters hats for the first 1,000 fans. Free t-shirts each night for the first 500 fans. September 16th and 17th, Presque Isle Downs, Erie, Pennsylvania. For more, go to PresqueIsleDowns.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 384643.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races. You know, just listening in, sometimes I think the headset's off, but I heard the Horse Bills ad and have used, I had set up on Horse Bills before, but most of our partnership, you know, most of our horses, you know, it's been two or three of us and it hasn't really needed the more involved billing. However, the 3 2-year-olds that we've got and the partnership group here, this was about 8 different people. So I reached out and Bob Ike and Mark Dosh helped me set up and I'm using the Horse Bills for this, you know, this set of horses because it's just too involved. You know, it's one thing when you're just whacking up. Okay, you know, here's the training bill, 3,000, 1,000, 1,000, 1,000. little bit more involved with eight partners and some varied percentages, and then you fold in, you know, the vet, and you fold in the farrier, and you fold in transport and everything else. And so I'm really impressed with what Bob Ike and Mark have been impressed with it, but now using it, you know, only done the first, you know, the July billing, but it's tremendous. No matter, you know, if you got some partners, it'll make your life easier. Same thing for if you're a vendor, you can get paid directly. Certainly Graham Motion, who joins us now, he understands the intricacies of this when it comes to the billing and keeping track of everything and the percentages, and it's no small task. And Graham, you're an incorporated entity. You're like a conglomerate.
Well, thanks to my wife, she keeps it all straight. So I'd be stuck without her.
Well, you've got to look after the operation and the horses, and things are pretty darn good. And I'm not going to have a tremendous amount of time with you today, but I do want to catch up on a few stake winners, and also I'll actually start with something offbeat. I happen to see that you're going to be the recipient of this latest acquisition by Phoenix Thoroughbreds, who has added you to the mix. Talk about training for them.
Yes, I mean, I have a filly running up at Saratoga this week for them, and they also purchased a nice filly at Saratoga that's going to come our way. So, look, obviously they're acquiring some really nice horse flesh, and it's always exciting to be a part of that, because it kind of puts you at a different level when you're able to compete with, especially with these imports that are purchased out of racing.
Well, I saw that tidbit. I wanted to bring it up, and of course, on Saturday, unbelievable group went postward in that pucker up, and Secret Message, you got a terrific ride by Rad Ortiz. That was a tough group, and that probably heralds some good things to come for Secret Message.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a particularly strong race this year. I agree. I've run in that race, I don't know, it feels like the last several years, but I did think it was a particularly tough group. Arad rode her with a lot of confidence. You know, she was a completely different filly this weekend than the night at Churchill Downs, which is, it's kind of a wild night, that night of the Stephen Foster, with, you know, a lot of music, a lot of wildness. It was a very hot night. She got very upset from the paddock to the gate, and I think that caused her not to run her race, but she was certainly a different filly on Saturday.
What do you do from here with her?
I think we'd probably go to the group race at Belmont. Which, you know, sets her off if she's good enough to go into the QE2, but I'm not going to get too far ahead of myself. We'll take one step at a time, but I was very impressed with her on Saturday.
Very much. Also, Untamed Domain in the Secretariat. What was your read?
A little disappointing. I mean, I feel like maybe I'm reaching with that horse to get the mile and a quarter. On pedigree, you'd think it's a natural, but I question if he really wants to go that far, and I think we'll get him back into a sensible spot. He's been an unlucky horse. You know, he was unlucky at Delaware. Jockey got bad instructions at Belmont the day he ran, so I think two of his last three races were throwouts, although I wouldn't give him a lot of excuses this weekend. But I need to regroup with him and get him in a good spot.
Similar question. You know, Rugby Man is talented. What can you do to extract it and distill it into a, you know, into tangible results?
Yeah, very frustrating. I mean, I'm a little bit in the same spot with both these colts. I think I just need to get them both on track. They're both immensely talented. Rugby Man, it's crossed my mind if I might try him on the grass at some point. I think it's something he might handle. Interesting, Todd ran his brother on Sunday in a stake at Saratoga. He finished third in the two-year-old race. So, look, this is a great family. This horse has definitely got potential. We've just got to get him back on track.
We didn't get a chance to talk after the big weekend at Monmouth, but Burned
a winner in the Molly pitcher. Some thoughts about that win and when we see her next.
Yeah, I mean, that was a nice win for her. That's huge by Bernardini. So I think we'll keep her in graded company. It's just a matter of finding the right spot, possibly Keeneland going 7 furlongs. I think 7 furlongs to a mile, 1/16 is her optimal distance. So we need to look around, and we'll keep her in graded company.
You also participated across the board at the Oceanport Irish Strait, who always gives an honest account. Then you had Party Boat as well for Hope Jones. In fact, the Party Boat yearling, the sibling, right, fetched a big number at the sale.
Absolutely. She's been a filly who's been a little bit disappointed this year, but I thought the matchmaker came up a very competitive race. Chad is so deep with his turf fillies that it kind of upsets the balance a little bit on these graded stakes, because whereas myself or someone else might be running one of those fillies in a grade one or a grade two, he has so many that he places them so well. He makes the grade threes very tough. So, look, I need to get Party Boat in a spot where she can win. Irish Strait's a very cool horse, very consistently good competitive horse, the kind of horse everyone would like to have.
Well, you certainly understand, paying tribute to the way Chad is dominating in this, particularly in this division, but Ultra Brat got very much flattered by Sister Charlie on Saturday in Chicago. I mean, Ultra Brat's performance, I haven't had a chance to talk to you. I mean, she was spectacular going back to the Diana.
Yeah, that was the toughest beat I've had in a long time. I mean, to come that close to winning that race, which is a race I've never won before. I've always wanted to win it. Ever since I worked for Jonathan Shepherd, it's been a race that we've always pointed for. So, yes, she ran huge. What can I say? Just tough to get beat like that. And the filly that beat us did come back and run a huge race on Saturday.
And similar, The Way I Am, who was dynamic, only beaten by the onrush of O'Brien and Athena in the Oaks.
Yeah, we had three tough beats in Group 1 in the last month, between Ultra Brats, The Way I Am, and then Lady Alexandra against the boys up in Canada got beat a real tough one right on the wire. So, it's frustrating, but at the same time, it's great to be competing at that level, so I shouldn't complain.
How about on the baby end? Let's look forward to what's ahead, and that includes as quickly as I think tomorrow, right? Desert Isle, trying to get this is a 3-year-old, but Desert Isle, if we get to run on the grass tomorrow.
Yeah, and I probably would run her either way. I have an exciting 2-year-old out of Irish War Cry's family for Isabel, called Regally Irish. She'll show up in a New Jersey bred 2-year-old race, hopefully, and not this weekend, but the following weekend. So I'm kind of excited about him.
How about that? And gets to run against his own kind at Monmouth. What else? I really should keep careful tabs on your 2-year-olds, because you're running at Presque, you're running at Laurel, Delaware, Saratoga.
Yeah, a little frustrating, to be honest. We haven't had a 2-year-old winner yet. I've been rained off quite a few 2-year-old races. Saratoga with fillies I would like to run on Sunday. We had to scratch 2. Saturday we scratched 1. So it's been a little bit of a frustrating 3 or 4 weeks with the 2-year-olds, but I do think we have some nice ones coming along. We have a half-sister to the Delaware Oaks winner, who looks really nice, a filly for Mr. Strawbridge by Pioneer of the Nile. So, look, we've got some exciting stock. We just need to get them to the races.
Well, Graham Motion, good to get a chance to congratulate you and catch up. Still 3 weeks, another 18 race days at Saratoga. Hopefully the weather moderates and we can get some wind and sun and dry out that turf course so you can go to town.
Yeah, Spring Quality had an easy work on the turf course at Oklahoma, by the way, for those who are interested, after we scratched him this weekend. So we hope to make the sword dancer with him.
Excellent. Excellent. So many more that we could get into, but we'll let you enjoy the afternoon. Graham, best of luck. Talk soon.
Thanks, Steve. Thank you.
Graham Motion. Speaking of racing this afternoon, I got a notice from a friend that is part of the Churchill Downs Racing Club, and they've got the Algorithms Colt Distant Shore debuting today. And a lot of people involved in the Downs Club, owners for the first time. And we wish them luck. This is actually a Maryland bred that they bought at Timonium. Distant Shore. Amos sending it out. Alex Ganchari is going to ride Distant Shore in the sixth at Indiana Grand today. It is a Tuesday, so you've got your typical Tuesday racing venues. Finger Lakes and Fort Erie, Indiana. Louisiana Downs, Mountaineer, Presque, Thistledown, Retama, Fairmont. Good luck if you're playing. Back with you tomorrow, Wednesday. Catch up with the race day. And I owe Dick Powell a call. We didn't get to Dick today, so we'll get him tomorrow. Sid Fernando, of course, as well. We'll talk some more sale recapping. I want to thank Boyd Brownie, by the way, for his visit. Howard Belvoir, Matt Hegarty, John White, and Graham Motion. Replay, 6 to 9 tomorrow. Archive, podcast, etc. at the website. Enjoy the day. Talk to you tomorrow.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio. Join us at Presque Isle Downs for our two biggest days of racing. Sunday, September 16th, the $200,000 Presque Isle Mile. Monday, September 17th, the Grade II $400,000 Presque Isle Masters. North America's top filly and mare sprinters compete in the Premier Breeders' Cup Prep Race. Free Presque Isle Masters hats for the first 1,000 fans. Free T-shirts each night for the first 500 fans. September 16th and 17th, Presque Isle Downs, Erie, Pennsylvania. For more, go to PresqueIsleDowns.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through HorseBills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.